Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, and they've got everything you can imagine when it comes to John Deere. They've got tractors and loaders and mowers and you name it. Go up and see them. They can get you set up. They got great financing right now. They're running some 0% programs that...
that no one's doing.
Yeah, nobody's going 0%, but John Deere is. Go up and see them. You can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Chat with them about what's available right now and what kind of a deal they can make you. They're also a new dealer for Ego lawn equipment, which is all battery-operated. So they're going to have battery-operated riding mowers and handheld equipment. Thank you, California, because that's going to be pretty much all you're going to get if it's under 25 horsepower now. You're going to go electric. And it's going to be good.
Whether you want it or not.
It'll be good for you, yeah. So go up and see them. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Free advertisement of the week goes to the Hilltop Diner. By the way, I forgot to do it the first hour. Hilltop Diner is awesome. So if you live in Reading, I realize a lot of our listeners do not, but if you do, it's in the old Marie Callender's building there at Mistletoe and Hilltop across from the Holiday Inn. And, okay, they have these things. They're called Texas Toothpicks. It's kind of listed as, like, you can have tater tots, fries, coleslaw, blah, 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 Texas Toothpicks. And you're thinking, oh, they're just like skinny French fries. Yeah, no, they're not. They are onions and jalapenos.
Yeah.
Deep fried, like little sticks.
Burn
anyway,
your face off.
No, they don't burn your face off. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I don't want to.
And they don't burn
out.
Your face off. Bill's never had one. Yeah. Full disclosure, Bill has never put one in his mouth.
No,
he has no
I
idea.
I look at them and they look like jalapenos, and jalapenos
they're just
burn
green.
Your face off.
He has no idea what it would do to his face. God. I'm going to lie about my free thing of the week anyway, so Hilltop Diner. And plus, whatever you ask him to do different, you know, if you want extra stuff added, okay, because that's me. I never see something on the menu. I like the way it is. I always change it. And they do such a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't give you the old, like, yeah, okay, here you go. Here's your messed up thing that we didn't have on our list.
Yeah, Aaron's a big gravy fan, so.
Yeah. Hard pass. Hard pass.
Hard pass on the gravy.
I told my server the other day, I'm like, no, gravy, we're just going to call it Yucky. We're going to change its name. It's just going to be called Yucky from here on.
And he agreed not to put any Yucky on your dinner.
I know. God bless him. Okay. Sorry, Phil.
That's
now,
all right.
Now I made it weird.
I would try those.
Oh my God, they're so great. They really are super great. It's kind of like the Bloomin' Onion thing they do at TGI Fridays or somewhere.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Somewhere does that. And they kind of like deep fry an onion with all the little sticks sticking up. It's like if you sawed all the little sticks off and then made a bunch of jalapenos with it. They're fantastic. And I didn't order them for the longest time because I didn't know what they were. My bad. So anyway, our guest this hour, we're going to switch gears.
Yeah, and circle back around here.
We're going to talk about the opposition to the FCC regulations of the Internet. Yay! Because we care about that. And a lot of times, you know, they come at us with these regulations and that turns into a big mess.
Everybody loves more regulations.
Yeah. Because it usually makes our lives so much better.
Yeah.
Phil Kirpin is a leading free market policy analyst and advocate in Washington. He was the principal policy and legislative strategist at Americans for Prosperity for over 5 years. Previously worked at the Free Enterprise Fund, Club for Growth, and the Cato Institute. He's a nationally syndicated columnist, chairman of the Internet Freedom Coalition, and author of the 2011 book, Democracy Denied. He's the president of American Commitment, which is dedicated to restoring and protecting the American commitment to free markets, economic growth, constitutionally limited government, property rights, and individual freedom.
What's not to like?
How in the heck could you go wrong with a list like that?
That's right.
All right, Phil, what kind of nuttiness are they doing to the Internet, or do they want to do to the Internet?
Well, it's pretty amazing, actually. I think this is
bad amazing,
a
I'm
good
assuming.
Example of the left's total imperviousness to reality and imperviousness to facts. You might remember about 6 or 7 years ago when the Trump FCC said they were going to repeal the Obama net neutrality regulations, which had only been in place for 2 years at that point. The Democrats and the media acted like this was the end of the universe. I mean,
right.
They were literally predicting mass death. They said, oh, the internet will break, people won't get suicide prevention resources, and there's going to be a mass die-off.
Oh, I missed that one.
As a result of this deregulation. And the internet's going to load one word at a time, and it's going to be a vast wasteland, and everything's going to be a disaster. I mean, basically every liberal publication had a headline to that effect. Every Democratic politician had a quote to that effect. And, you know, the Trump FCC went ahead and did it anyway, repealed it anyway. And there were no follow-up stories.
Yeah.
Because
I didn't notice any difference.
Of those, yeah, zero of the – well, there actually was a difference, but it was a positive difference. This is what happened. So private investment went back up to the pre-regulation trend line, increased pretty dramatically. Average internet speeds approximately tripled in just a couple of years after deregulation. And prices were actually down a little bit. They're up a little bit now, although much less than inflation. But for a couple of years, they were actually down, the amount that people paid. So, you know, if there's ever been an example of a deregulation doing exactly what you wanted it to do, it would be this, right? You got more investment, you got better service at a lower cost. They're basically everything you could want from a deregulation. And yet, the Democrats come in, and as soon as they got a third Democrat on the FCC, which took them a few years because they tried to put a real left-wing nut job who got rejected even by Democratic senators a few times. So they didn't actually get a majority until about a year ago. And, you know, what was the first thing they did? They said, we're going to bring back the Obama net neutrality regulations and more, actually, because now they no longer are happy with economic regulation. Now they also have to have equity regulation. And so they have a companion
order. Of course
they
do.
They have one order to bring back the Obama regulation, and they had another one for what they call digital discrimination, and now they're going to prohibit any business practice that has a disparate impact on any of the laundry list of protected classes, sex, race, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to be the economic regulators of internet providers, and they're also going to be the equity police for the internet. And you know, it's pretty easy to predict what's going to happen. We're going to get less private investment because, you don't know what the bureaucrats are going to let you do or not do. And they actually kind of admit this. In the new net neutrality order, they kind of admit they're going to get less private investment because they have a paragraph in there that kind of says, you know, critics say we're going to get less private investment if we regulate, but that doesn't matter because we have all this tax money. We've got, you know, $65 billion from the infrastructure bill, and, you know, there's so much government money now that we don't need private investment. So this is the path they want to go down, essentially, is more and more tax dollars, more and more regulations to disincentivize private investment. And what's really so insane about the timing of this happening now is we just had kind of the ultimate test of whether a deregulated model or a regulated model is better for internet service, which is when the lockdowns happened. When the lockdowns happened, you know, internet traffic demand went up something like 40% overnight globally. In the U.S., we basically handled it fine. I mean, you might have had a call that dropped now and then or something like that, but basically we handled it fine. We had no bandwidth constraints of any significance in the U.S. In Europe, they had a total crisis. Their regulators actually had to call YouTube, call Netflix, say, throttle back your streams or the network's going to break. We had nothing like that in the U.S., and so the regulated model failed when there was a big surge in demand. The deregulated model succeeded. And yet our current FCC chair, when she announced she was bringing back these regulations, actually gave a speech about how, you know, I had bad Wi-Fi in my house during COVID, and that's when I knew we had to regulate the internet. And I'm watching this, I'm just like, can I buy her a new router? And this is like the craziest thing I've ever seen. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so they've now finalized these regulations. They're going to come back into effect. They finalized the digital discrimination one. It's going to come back into effect. Obviously, there'll be litigation. There always is. Maybe the courts will do something about it. Maybe President Trump will come back in and repeal it again, and they'll predict that we're all going to die all over again. But I just think it's an incredible illustration of how liberals will not be dissuaded from their attempts to regulate everything by reality, by the experience being the opposite of what they said it would be.
Well, I think that they don't want to go too far on this, but my guess is they want to, quote, regulate it so that they can control what we say. so that they can decide that we're doing.
Well, be careful. I've said that, and whenever I say that, I get called a conspiracy.
Right.
But I do agree with you.
They never control content.
But the joke is, like, we have to all get new conspiracies because all our other conspiracy theories came true.
Right. So this is the thing, right? So, you know, I've said for years, going back to when Obama did this, I said, look, the only real reason they want economic regulation is they want to control content. Otherwise, what's the point of this?
Like
there's some actual economic problem they're trying to solve. So I said, there's got to be what this is about. And then I say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. But then what do we see during COVID? All right, what do we see? They were routinely calling companies and saying, you know, don't let this dangerous misinformation stand. You have to do something about this, that, the other thing, election disinformation, climate denial. Basically, anything you say that they really don't like, they say, oh, this is dangerous. You need to, quote unquote, voluntarily remove it. And, you know, though most of these companies are kind of liberal to start with, so they probably would be inclined to listen to this stuff. But imagine, you know, now you know that the guy who's calling you and saying, hey, take a look at maybe, you know, quote, voluntarily shutting up these conservatives. Now you know that agency's got total economic control over your business. They can decide whether your business model is allowed to exist, how much you're allowed to charge, whether you get smacked with, disparate impact discrimination claims, et cetera, et cetera. You're never going to say no to them, are you? And so I think that's exactly what this is about. It's about getting companies under the thumb of federal regulators so that they can suggest removing, quote, dangerous disinformation, which means shutting us up.
Yeah, which means we all go back into the heretic box again, and the witch burnings will continue. Wow.
If these regulations that they're proposing, I know they're kind of appealing a lot of this, and it isn't going to happen right away. But when would it take effect, do you think?
That's a really good question. I think the digital discrimination order, which was just the final, was published in the Federal Register last week. I think that one takes effect immediately. The net neutrality one, I'm not sure if that carries an effective date on it or not. I'd have to look that up.
And the discrimination order, what would that?
Prepared for what's kind of an obvious question.
Yeah, what would the discrimination order? How would that impact what we're currently seeing?
Well, it means that for the first time ever, the Federal Communications Commission is going to serve as sort of the equity police for the internet, meaning people can say, someone can file a complaint that says, you know, such and such company only hired white people to dig trench for a new fiber optic line or whatever, that means they were discriminatory or, you know, whatever it might have been. And actually, it could be much, much more subtle than that. It could be, the price of whatever package is too expensive for a certain minority group or whatever it is, even though they charge the same price for everyone, it has a disparate impact on this group, and therefore it's discriminatory. Because the way they wrote the rule, it's not equal treatment, they're not trying to prohibit discriminatory action. They're trying to prohibit any action that has a disparate impact on a protected group. And so companies can be whacked with complaints that never intended to do anything wrong to anyone. And so it's going to be a very open-ended liability, and it's hard to predict exactly where it's going to go, but it's, for the first time, I think, going to create a lot of potential exposure for companies. And then, the other aspect of it is they're going to have the equivalent of old-fashioned rate cases, like a utility regulator. If somebody comes in and says, the price they charged in this neighborhood was too high and it was discriminatory in its effect because people couldn't afford it, I mean, they're going to have to, like, build a record and decide what the rate should be. And so it becomes sort of a backdoor way to utility-style rate regulation as well.
Hmm. So it's all going to be pretty much up to the federal government's interpretation of what they're seeing, and that will push them forward.
It's pretty amazing. It's actually the digital discrimination one is kind of like a classic example of Republicans being kind of stupid. I mean, when they were doing the bipartisan infrastructure law, they put $65 billion in there for broadband subsidies. And Republicans love this because they've got lots of rural areas and they think they're going to get all this money. Of course, I think Given the bent of the Biden administration, tons of this money is going to go to urban areas that already have service anyway, and it's going to be all kinds of, you know, the usual boondoggles. But the Republicans, they saw this money and said, oh, great, this is wonderful, we're going to support this. And the Democrats said, well, you know, we just want some language in here that, you know, we're going to prohibit digital discrimination. And the Republicans said, oh, okay, yeah, no, nobody's discriminating, so that's fine, no problem. And they put language, the way it was actually written, it was like equal access, equal, yeah, it was language that a normal person would read and say they're just talking about intentional discrimination. Mm-hmm. But of course, anytime you give new language to a left-wing regulatory agency, they're going to twist it and push the limits and do what they want to do with it. And so this Biden FCC said, we found zero evidence of any intentional discrimination, but instead of saying, and that means we don't need to regulate, they said, and therefore we're going to do this disparate impact standard and, you know, open the door to any kind of complaint about anything. And now all the Republicans have voted for it. Oh, that's not what we meant. This is horrible. And it's like, okay, well, like, next time don't give any new authority, period. And you won't be in this situation.
I know it. See, that's the thing. Anytime you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. They always do. They always go too far. And
yeah,
this is what you end up with.
Well, you know, when you get into the whole broadband thing, the rural areas do need it, but what happens in a lot of those cases is they run the fiber optic line, you know, from Mexico to Canada, but it doesn't go to anybody's house. Like, it does, you'd be blown away. Like, a lot of these programs, they run it through, like, a town or an area or whatever, but it doesn't actually go to the house. So if you live
I remember when Obama said,
got to pay $2,000 to get it to your house from the street.
I remember when Obama said we're going to reach these last remote locations that don't have broadband, and I think he asked for $9 billion to do that, and it seemed like a lot of money at the time. And, you know, now we've had, you know, they did the $350 billion of state aid under COVID, and they said one of the things you should use it for is broadband, and they did another $65 billion in infrastructure. And, I don't know where all the money's going, but it's not going to reaching the very small percentage of the population that's still not connected. And, of course, when government runs these things,
yeah,
it becomes very corrupt and politicized, and it goes to, you know, being subsidizing the third provider in some town somewhere that, you know, is politically advantageous instead of actually reaching people who don't have a provider. And, you know, we've just had enormous waste in all of these programs. And there's also insane politicization. So one of the subsidy programs...
Hold that thought, because yeah, let's do that all as one thing. We have to take a really quick break, and then we'll come right back. Our guest is Phil Kirpin, and we are talking about the FCC regulations. His article is More Debt Without Spending Reform is Dirty. And we have that posted for you today. It's January 28, 2024. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Freedom's the answer. What is the question? Resist the advances of force and aggression, and leave to your children the promise of something more. As God is my witness, I'll be a slave no more.
I like that part. Let me hold your crown. Before I forget, the other article that's on there is about the topic we're discussing today. They're both really good, though. FCC's chair's bad Wi-Fi is not a reason to regulate the Internet. I hope you go on and read that.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to where the money's going, Phil, before I unceremoniously cut you off. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. So this is, I think, an amazing example of why discouraging private investment and just saying, oh, we're going to make up for it with more taxpayer dollars is so destructive. Besides it being bad economics, it opens the door to political mischief and retribution on political grounds. And, you know, one of these subsidy programs is a program run at the FCC called the RDOF program. And they already had approved $900 million in subsidies for customers in sort of remote rural locations to to SpaceX, Starlink Internet Service, which is Elon Musk's satellite internet service. And the $900 million was to serve, remote homes where it doesn't make sense to run wires because they're in the middle of nowhere at the top of a mountain or whatever it is. And the subsidy amount that they were going to serve these homes with for a subsidy of $1,000 per location on average for the $900 million dollar grant that had already been approved. And then something went out, after he had bought X and become a critic of the administration and whatever, and some kind of word went out from the White House, we think. And what do you know, they announced 3-2, actually, I don't even think they voted on it. I think the chairwoman did it herself. They said they were going to revoke the subsidy eligibility for Starlink, and it was no longer eligible, and they would not get the money they'd already been awarded, and they were going to re-award subsidies for the same households that were supposed to be served for a $1,000 subsidy by Starlink. They're now going to be served by other providers for an average $5,000 subsidy. And so in order to stick it to Elon Musk, we're going to spend five times more as taxpayers through this program. And maybe there's a good reason, although I can't imagine what it would be, but it looks for all the world like they're just, taking revenge on a political rival of the president and doing it at very large expense to taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a pretty good example of the kind of mischief that occurs when you replace, a market-based approach to broadband with a, taxpayer-funded, subsidy-heavy approach.
Yeah, and it also kind of demonstrates what you can do when you have basically unlimited resources to spend wherever you deem fit. And
by the way, it's not their money.
Yeah, exactly. It's not their money, and they're gonna award people that that they agree with. And it's I don't know. I think stories like that need to be screamed a little louder because it happens all the time.
Yeah.
You have picking the winners and the losers, and our government should not be involved in that.
Well, it's weird because they get, the Department of Defense is still using Starlink, and so it's like, it's good enough for a huge contract for the Defense Department, but it's not good enough for rural broadband. I don't.
Yeah.
The government's not even consistent with itself. It's so big, but yeah.
And where does that tie into some of this regulatory stuff? Does it keep the door shut on things like that, or is that a whole separate deal?
Well, I mean, it's not directly related, but as I was saying, if you pile regulations on, you're going to get less investment from private companies, and I think you're also probably going to get less participation by private companies in some of these subsidy programs. And so what you're going to get is, in some areas, you're going to get, government-run networks. They're going to fill in because no commercial provider wants to be involved, and then you're going to end up paying for it, with your state and your local and your federal tax dollars or in your electric bill or something like that. Or you're going to have, you're going to have a commercial provider, but not one of the major ones, without the same economies of scale, without necessarily the same quality of service and so forth. And so I think we're going down a path where, as a policy matter, as a choice, as a country, we're reversing one of the greatest policy decisions that was ever made, which was not to regulate the internet, not to mess with it, not to tax it, just to sort of leave it alone and see what happens. It was a pretty unusual restraint from our federal government back in the 90s, actually, when Bill Clinton was president. It was Bill Kennard at the FCC who kind of said, we're not going to use old-fashioned regulations for this new technology. We're going to kind of leave it alone and see what happens. And then the Powell FCC under Bush said the same thing for cable modem. And as a result, we had this competition between phone and cable in this country that made us kind of the world leader in terms of broadband. And, the vast majority of people have at least two choices from the phone and cable company, and they compete with each other on price and on quality, and it's driven a lot of investment and a lot of improvement in technology. And if you start to say, we're going to have heavy government regulation that's going to deter private investment, and we're going to make up for it with subsidies, and government's going to be making the decisions. We're going to replace what worked really well with something that's not going to work as well, in my judgment. And I don't want to say it's going to be like the end of the universe and the internet's going to break down completely, and because I don't want to be like the left, you know, making their over-the-top predictions. But I do think that, you know, on that we're going to get a worse experience, and we're going to pay more for it, even if, you know, even if our bill's a little less, we're going to pay more for it because of all the tax dollars we're going to be pouring in.
So with a new administration that thinks a little differently, I mean, these regulations could be turned around and rolled back and changed.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Trump FCC repealed them last time. You know, they could repeal them again and probably will and should. But I think there's something pretty wrong with kind of our system overall when every agency has these all these insane expensive regulations and they sort of toggle on and off depending on the party in the White House. You know, we're supposed to have stable laws that go through the process of, you know, House and Senate and signed by the president or a veto override. We're not supposed to just have sort of vast power residing in all these agencies. And so, you know, and one of the challenges, I think, is, you know, it's great. We can turn this off. We can turn off a bunch of EPA regulations. Others, you know, every agency's got a bunch of expensive regulations. We can turn them off in a Republican administration. But can companies really make investments and make business decisions based on the repeal of regulations that they can sort of expect are going to be flipped back on the next time Democrats win? And, of course, you know, we saw this really with what happened with the auto industry, right? You know, Obama had all these auto regulations on fuel economy and sort of pushing things in the direction of electric cars, and Trump repealed them all. But what did the auto companies all say? They said, well, you know, we can't really change our strategy based on, you know, an administration that might only be 4 years. And they were probably actually smart to do that because Biden put all the rules on, back on and then some.
Right.
And so, you know, I wonder if Trump comes in and repeals them again, are they going to actually change their plans? I mean, I don't know. So I wish the major economic questions were actually answered through our constitutional process instead of it all being this, you know, these agency decision making.
Well, I was kind of maintained that the smart money would be for the legislative branch to sue the executive branch for overreach, for basically making.
Yeah, do the courts? I don't know if the courts want to be the arbiter.
Right,
of that.
Right.
Know,
so then,
the
so then
really
you
would be
you,
for Congress to pass, you know, to take its powers back. I mean, it's delegated all of its. It passes these broad, vague laws, and then it sort of puts up token.
Yeah.
Well, we tried our best to overturn whatever this agency did, but the president vetoed us. Nothing we can do. And it's kind of like, guys, you control the power of the purse. You control the power to rewrite all of those laws. You know, one of the bills that I've been working on for many years that would probably do the most to solve this state of affairs is a bill called the RAINS Act.
Yes.
It would actually prohibit any economically significant new regulation from taking effect unless it got sent up to Congress for a vote of approval first.
Yep.
If we could pass something like that,
that would be super smart.
You know, look, yeah, we still have a lot of dumb regulations because we know Congress is capable of doing lots of dumb things, but, you know, at least it wouldn't flip back and forth all the time with administrations, and at least when you got something dumb, you could look up who voted for it and hold them accountable come election time instead of it all riding on the presidential. And so that's probably the most important kind of reform idea. And we have passed it in the House, so, you know, maybe five or six times. We've never been able to get a Senate vote. So we're going to keep chipping away on that. And, you know, the Supreme Court just heard a case that could potentially overturn the Chevron Doctrine, which is the decision from 1984 that tells courts that they should defer to the expertise of regulatory agencies unless it's arbitrary and capricious. And, of course, in practice, that means that regulatory agencies can do almost anything they want, and lower courts will not stop them. Sometimes the Supreme Court does, but lower courts will almost never stop them because they'll say, oh, we defer under Chevron. So if that case gets overturned, that could stop some of this. But I really think, you know, until voters start to say we can't have the whole kind of economic, you know, we can't have trillions of dollars of regulations riding on the presidential election every time, we've got to actually make Congress do its job and, you know, start punishing congressmen for not stepping up and taking their power back. You know, it's not going to change. As long as we tolerate it, it's not going to change. And so, I mean, that's kind of been our number one long-term priority at American Commitment. And we've been working on kind of that broader structural issue for many years.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because we just, you know, when things are, our decisions are made by executive order, then every 4 years, potentially every, you know, or eight, there's this massive whiplash that happens, and real laws that go through Congress take a long time to put in and take out.
It's not just that it whiplashes back and forth, but also, you know, it never quite whiplashes all the way.
No, you're right.
Oh, it never goes back all the way.
No, it's not an even whiplash, but it's just like people, people kind of go, wait, when did that happen? Because it doesn't go through the process. So they
Because we never quite get control over most of these agencies, even when we have the agency heads. It's very hard for them to actually control their own employees.
Right. And so people don't have any way to intercede in that. Yes, there's comment periods and all that, but they kind of go, yeah, okay, shut up, little people. You know, if you just let us run everything, the world would be so much better. Because I think that's what they think.
They really do. They do. They absolutely think that. You know, we actually, there was a survey recently that another group that I do work with called Committee to Unleash Prosperity did with Scott Rasmussen, and he identified kind of who the elites are in our society. He developed sort of a rubric for that. I think it was income over $150,000 and lived in a high population density area and had a postgraduate degree, some kind of combination like that. And then he surveyed that group of elites and their views compared to sort of voters in general. And it was pretty remarkable. I mean, the elites think that we have too much freedom in this country. Mm-hmm. They think we need less freedom and more government control. The elites think that we should ban internal combustion vehicles, that we should ban gas stoves, that we should ban privately owned air conditioning, that we should ban non-essential air travel, and I'm sure they think theirs is essential. But, you know, they've got views that are sort of alien to the rest of us on so many issues, and you know, those are their sincere beliefs, right? So they really do think that sort of the regulatory tyranny is being exercised for our own benefit. And I don't, you know, there's the famous H.L. Mencken quote about how, you know, the worst tyrant of all is the omnipotent moral busybody who thinks that they're imposing their tyranny for your own benefit because they, you know, they have no remorse. I don't remember the exact quote, but you've probably seen it before. And I think that that's kind of what the left has become in this country. I mean, they think that the elite left, you know, the university professors and the media elites and the Wall Street chieftains and so forth, they really think that we don't know how to educate our own kids and take care of our own families and our own businesses, and that if they make these decisions for us, we'll be better off. And so they have no reason to ease up on any of this. They really think they think they're you know, we're too dumb to make our own decisions, so they're going to help us out by making them for us.
Yeah, there really needs to be more pushback on that, because we're seeing that in so many different areas. You're going to love this. It's going to be good for you.
Sit down, all you little people.
Yeah, sit down and just go
along
with
this. You're not qualified.
You'll see.
It's there's a really good book out there. It's about technocracy, and that's what the movement of technocracy. It wasn't about technology necessarily, but it was about the technocrats, so the bureaucrats, the people that were the experts. They believed that if they ran the whole world, that, you know, they ran everything and they could tell us all what to do. Stop electing dummies dummies electing dummies is bad. Let's get the experts in here and let them run everything. And, well, we saw how that worked out with COVID, and that was amazing.
Yeah, I was about to say, we just ran that experiment on a global scale.
It was so awesome. God, yeah. It was so awesome while that was happening. I'm like, God bless America, this is that stinking technocracy thing, but it's like the dry run. And I thought, wow, you had Fauci and Burke and all these people. I thought, just in case anybody was curious how that turns out, like, spoiler alert, we're still paying for that. We have to take one more quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Phil Kirpin. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Too slow.
Freedom, what did you hope to learn about here? If I was someone else, would this all fall apart? Strange, where were you when we started this game? I wish the real world would just stop. Spending myself.
except for the fact that Bobby Brown was a really bad man. That was kind of a great song. I think, Phil, you should do American Commitment, the musical. Maybe use that as, like, your theme song. I can do what I want to do.
Yeah, it's my prerogative.
Good choice of songs, although, yes, you're correct. Probably not the spokesman we want.
Yeah, he was a horrible human being, but, yeah, it was kind of a snazzy song, so it's like, I'm always torn. But, yeah, it's like, leave us the heck alone, but the technocrats and the bureaucrats, it's very interesting to me that when people go to work in Washington, D.C., they're, it's odd. Like, people think, oh, well, they go there and they drink Kool-Aid. Nah, I don't think so. I think it just exposes, like a flaw they already had, but what you really see is that they start to believe that they have all the answers and that the people out in the cheap seats, that their input has no value. That seems to be the two teams that I've noticed. You have the guys that think they know everything, and then you have the other guys that are like, well, wait a minute, what about everybody else?
Right, and, you know, sort of to get back to where we started at the top, they're so convinced that they know everything that they will not be dissuaded by reality. You know, they will not be dissuaded by what's obvious right in front of their eyes. And so, you know, as I said, they brought back regulations that they were completely wrong about. I mean, they said if you deregulate, it's going to be the end of the world, dead bodies in the streets, it's going to be terrible, the internet will break completely. None of that happened. And now it's their first opportunity, they're going to bring it back anyway. They're just going to pretend that whole insane, you know, apocalyptic, all of it, that never happened.
Well, I like the things that you list in your article. The end of the internet as we know it, headlined on the CNN homepage.
I mean, it's like ridiculous, right? Actually, the senior Republican on the commission, Brendan Carr, in his dissent from the dais, put up slides of like all these headlines and all these quotes. It was one of the funniest speeches I've ever seen. But, you know, they voted 3-2 anyway. You know, they weren't dissuaded by that. But it was pretty, you know, he did a pretty good job of shaming them to the extent he could. I mean, I don't know who watches those speeches other than me, but I thought it was good.
I think we pull out the ones we like. But, yeah, it's hard because that stuff's going on 24/7 on multiple channels. So,
yeah.
Little.
And to your point about COVID really being kind of like the ultimate, they had a chance to run everything in the whole world and they screwed all of it up catastrophically. You know, you and I know they screwed it all up catastrophically. They still think they did the right thing. It was the anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers and the disinformation. Otherwise, the lockdowns would have worked and been great. And, you know, because, as I said, they're impervious to reality. So it doesn't matter. I mean, there's a thing on the World Economic Forum website that says COVID-19 was the test of social responsibility. And then it says, like, what's next? And has all their climate stuff listed. It's not like a secret conspiracy. It's literally on their website. They say, okay, that was so great. That was the test. Now we're going to move on and do all this stuff on climate. And so it's not, they don't even know that they screwed everything up. They don't, to their,
no,
you know,
no.
To their minds.
Well, look at the doctors who have had, you know, patients die. My doctor, our family physician, he's just, I mean, he's angry about it. He's like, I treated hundreds of people, and the only ones who died are the ones that got the shot. And he, you know, just, there were obvious things that happened. And he's like, I cannot believe even medical professionals in my own area can't see this. So it wasn't even just government.
Well, I think a lot of them see it, but they're terrified to buck the system because they're afraid they're going to lose their license if they speak up.
Yeah, what if they come after me or whatever?
Exactly. And that's still happening. It's still happening, even though, you know, the evidence that's come out since then about some of the flaws in all of that vaccine stuff.
How many people are still wearing a mask in their car by themselves?
Didn't they actually pass a law in California that you can lose your medical license for COVID disinformation or something like that?
They kind of tried to do that, and then
and they backed off it?
Yeah, because that was like, okay, well, who's going to be making that decision? Are they going to be physicians or bureaucrats or what?
But doctors did get called before for speaking against the vaccine and threatened with losing their license.
Yeah,
I mean, that's their livelihood.
And the the problem is they have to treat their patients, and if you can't do it because you can't, you're not using, you know, like he said, it's like the first day of virology. Like, what the heck? Like, these things, we know how to treat these things. This isn't new. But yeah, you involve the government then as the big brother who's going to come in and tell everybody. And look at just the mask thing, you know. It says right on the box that it's not there to treat viruses. You know, it can't prevent a virus. So here, quick, strap this on your face.
There were like a dozen studies that showed that masks don't work.
But that's literally a disclaimer on the box.
You know, the CDC actually did a review in May 2020 of all the existing science, and they said they don't work. And then they mandated them for everyone anyway. And they just put all these websites up saying they do work. It's like, okay, now.
Okay.
And I mean, that I don't think it's over. I think they're still, you know, jonesing for
so
the control.
You've got some places that are going to do it every winter forever.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to admit they were wrong. And so you've got some hospital systems now that are going to mandate masks every winter for the rest of the time. And it's, I don't even know what to say.
But well, yeah, because if you could figure it out, it's a little bit like being able to understand, you know, child molesters and serial killers. Like, if you can actually understand why they're doing it, you might be one. So I think like some of this, the fact that we can't figure it out is actually good. It's frustrating, but it's a good sign. It means we can't get it.
But a lot of them don't even follow their own rules. I mean, I got called for jury duty last week, and right on their call it says, you know, you must wear a mask when you come into the courthouse. And I'm like, I'm not wearing a mask. I walked in, nobody was wearing a mask. You know, and so, I mean, you send out confusing things like that, and you know, this is what you get. You get this hysteria that, oh, I got to wear a mask.
Well, and so let's translate that back to Phil, your article here. You know, if the FCC wants to regulate the internet in a much tighter fashion, and this is the same kind of mindset we're operating with, what could go wrong?
Yeah, I could think of a few things. Right, exactly. Look, I mean, it's we now know for a fact that the Biden administration actively induced private social media companies to censor conservatives on COVID, on the election, on climate, and so forth. And the Supreme Court just heard a case a few weeks ago, Missouri v. Biden, on whether that's a First Amendment violation. And I don't know how they're going to decide that case, because it's a tricky thing, right? And up to now, when you had First Amendment violations, it was the government censoring someone, expressing their speech in some way. Now it's a little bit of a different question. Is the government asking a private company to censor speech a violation of the First Amendment? I think it is. But I don't know how the Supreme Court's going to come down on that. But I can tell you that whether it's unconstitutional or not, it's a huge problem. And if there's more economic control over more companies, then there are a lot more opportunities for them to, quote, suggest, you know, voluntary, quote, voluntary censorship activities, which, of course, will greatly harm conservatives on every issue. And by the way, we were mostly right about the things they were censoring us on. It's not even like they were, you know, most of the disinformation was actually correct information, as it turned out. And so it's a very, very dangerous path that we're going down. And you know, I think, regardless of how that Supreme Court case turns out, I think we really need legislation that Jim Jordan has introduced. They would actually make individual government employees responsible if they direct private companies to censor speech and expression. They, at a minimum, they should be fired and fined. I think they should get jail time. I think it should be criminal. Because if there isn't individual government employee responsibility,
yes,
then even if the Supreme Court said it's a First Amendment violation, there's no reason for them to stop. They're not going to be, you know, nothing's going to happen to them. And so I really think we've got to get after this problem of government employees using their power over private companies as a way to censor their political opponents.
I don't disagree. And if there is no, we all know this. I mean, we know this from raising kids and dogs. You know, if there are no consequences, guess what? You got bad kids and you got unruly dogs. Everybody knows you have to have consequences, or it just doesn't work. Things don't self-regulate. So if you have people out there with all this tremendous amount of power, and they go too far, nothing happens, Lois Lerner, then they just do it some more.
Yeah, Lois Lerner retired with full pension.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you followed the Chaz Littlejohn case. Is that name familiar to you?
Yeah, why? It's like a blast from
Chaz
the past,
Littlejohn
though.
Chaz Littlejohn was the IRS contractor working for Booz Allen Hamilton, who only got the job at Booz Allen Hamilton because he was he saw that as a way to get access to private IRS data. Then once he got the private IRS data, he stole the years and years of tax returns for 7,500 of the richest taxpayers in the country.
I remember
he
that.
He sent Donald Trump's returns to the New York Times. He sent the other 7,000-plus people's returns to ProPublica, and they timed it around, you know, politically advantageous times. So, I mean, this guy committed 7,500-plus felonies, and they pled him out to one count of a single charge of, you know, and he's... They haven't done the sentencing yet, but he's going to get a total slap on the wrist. One count for stealing, you know, 10 years of returns from 7,000 people and sending them to the media.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
So I'm sure he has no regrets. I mean, he's going to... He got away with it, essentially.
Yeah, there are just a lot of examples of that kind of thing. And yet, you have people who try to do the right thing. We had a government employee in our area who stood up for the people who were fighting fire here. We have lots of those. And stood up for them and stopped the... they were feeding them, like, moldy bread and moldy... The food was... unbelievable. And so she got rid of the contractor, the big government contractor that was running the food service, and had somebody else come in and provide food. And she's working in Siberia now because she did the right thing. And you think, wow, doesn't really pay to do the right thing in the bureaucracy. But if you do the wrong thing, there's no consequence. There only seems to be consequence for people who color outside the lines and go against their, you know, go against the overlords. I don't know. It just seems bizarre. So, what can people do? Can people do anything with this FCC thing, or is this something we just have to watch?
Well, we've been sending them letters. The official comment deadline was the 18th, so if you sent it now, they would call it an ex parte. It wouldn't technically count, but
okay.
You can still write to them. And our form also is set up so that if you do write to them, it'll send a copy to your congressman and two senators as well, and you can bug them about it. And,
so they can go to AmericanCommitment.org?
Yep.
And that's where it's on there? Could you... Would you come back on and tell us about it? After, you know,
To answer your earlier question about the effective date, we don't have that yet because this is still a proposed rule. When
okay.
we issue the final, which could be any day because the comment period is closed, now that will have the effective date. So I actually didn't know it because it doesn't exist yet.
Nice.
Okay, good.
All right. We have to run away, and we'll let you get on with your Sunday. Thanks for coming on with us. And
yeah, thanks, Phil.
We look forward to chatting with you again. That has been Phil Kirpin, the president of American Commitment. You're listening to We the People. We'll have this posted for you at wethepeopleradio.us.